Dr. Weil brought up the confluence between the deep meanings of the words meditation and medicine, and that's been something that has struck me as well. And the way I see the commonality is that the term measure that he was referring to, that's the root meaning of it, has to do with the Platonic notion of what David Bohm described as right inward measure. And so medicine is the restoring of right inward measure when it's disturbed in some way, which could be that imbalance of the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. And meditation is, in my mind, the direct perception of right inward measure. So it has an element to it that seems active, like now I'm going to meditate. But there's another way in which our understanding of meditation needs to be somewhat different. And this is a big cultural shift for most of us in the West, because it has huge elements of non-doing. It's not just another activity that you would plunk yourself down and then do, even though it does help to follow instructions at the beginning. But those instructions are kind of like fingers pointing at the moon. And the important thing is not to look at the finger, but to look at the moon. And nobody, for instance, would climb on top of a sign that's pointing to New York City and with an arrow that says 300 miles and think they'd gotten to New York City. But that's a danger in meditation practice, is that you can start to think that I'm meditating and I'm following this particular meditative tradition or meditative pathway or meditative instructions, and the instructions are not the meditation itself. So that's an important thing to remember, that meditation in many ways is about dropping into stillness and non-doing. It's about how we relate to the present moment, and it has everything to do with paying attention. Everything to do with paying attention. One might say that in our society, you know, there's a lot of talk about attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Well, from the point of view of the meditative traditions, the entire society has attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And you can see that just by watching your mind for even 30 seconds or a minute, how often we interrupt ourselves within a particular chain of thought, how much we come here and go there and this and that and everything else, running around to such a degree doing this and that, that we forget about the very essential dimension of our lives that is what I call the domain of being. And after all, we are called human beings, not human doings. And a lot of the time, I don't think we're actually cultivating or even recognizing that. So we can go for days, weeks, months, and virtually years conditioned to run on automatic pilot, as if on a treadmill, trying to get where we need to be, trying to push away what we don't want. And much of this is focused on attaining particular states, goals, or conditions at some future time, or being obsessed or absorbed with things that have already happened and are over in the past. And in the process, if you start to pay attention in this way to what's on your mind, you'll notice that the present moment, which is the only time any of us are ever alive in, kind of gets a little short shrift. It gets just a little bit squeezed. So part of the virtue and the power of meditation is to reclaim the present moment. In fact, I would say that no matter what techniques you're practicing, that that is one of the cardinal unifying factors of all meditation practices, is to reclaim the present moment. This is a revolutionary act when you think about it. Stopping, taking some clock time out of our 24 hours and dropping into silence and stillness as an adventure and just watching what happens. It requires a tremendous amount of motivation and intentionality to do that, because we've always got something better to do. Who needs being? And then if you think, well, it's the same as sleep, that, you know, it's just like dropping into unconsciousness, it's not. It's about wakefulness. Mindfulness and meditation in general are about cultivating the exact opposite of sleep. That's cultivating full wakefulness, full presence of mind, body, heart, and spirit. And to be able to hold that in awareness that when we begin to explore these dimensions, we discover is infinite, is far, far larger than we ever thought. And that's part of the adventure. And that's why sometimes you'll see t-shirts around that say things like, meditation, it's not what you think. because it really doesn't have to do with thinking, and very often even thoughts about meditation get in the way of the direct perception of our experience from moment to moment. So I like to think about it, and Zen masters that I've studied with have used this kind of languaging. It's about dropping underneath thought, as if thought were like the surface of the ocean. Let's say the mind is like the ocean. And as you know, with different weather patterns and wind patterns, the ocean will wave to one degree or another. And our minds wave in just that way. And you could think of each individual wave as a thought. It rises up out of the totality of mind, it lingers for a moment, and then falls back down. Very often when it rises up, we immediately act on it. We do it, do something, we try to fix it, we try to go someplace, we remember we're late, whatever it is, and we get carried away by the thought. But if you identify in meditation practice with the entirety of the ocean of your own mind, then you can learn to watch your thoughts without getting caught up in them, and for that matter, watch one's emotions as well, and instead stay with the deep, undulating calmness that's characteristic of, say, the ocean 20 or 30 feet down, even in the midst of hurricanes or typhoons or turbulent moments of experience. And very often we can experience tremendous storms in our lives, in the mind, in the inner landscape that can throw us for one hell of a loop. And part of the power of meditation is its willingness to hold whatever it is that comes up right here in the present moment and not try to fix it immediately, but to instead drop in and allow the creativity of our own discernment and wisdom and self-compassion to manifest and flower, and they do, without having to make anything happen. That's really where the power of meditation lies, and it's not something that can be transferred from one person to another. What can be transferred is the passion for it. A sense of, like, being still for a moment or two in your life is giving yourself a tremendous gift. If you will, it's giving yourself back to yourself in your primary form and uncovering what amount to hidden dimensions of being, which when we're so busy running here and there, we actually don't cultivate at all. And very often that can be tremendously problematic in terms of our overall health, both mental and physical and psychological and spiritual, because when we get really driven on automatic pilot, trying to get someplace else all the time without being attentive to where we already are, we can leave a wake of disaster behind us in terms of our own health and well-being, because we're not listening to the body, we're not paying attention to its messages, we're not even in our bodies much of the time. And I like to paraphrase James Joyce, who has this wonderful line in one of the stories in Dubliners that goes like this: Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. And if you start to check it out, you'll notice that a lot of the time the mind just takes off and is not in the body. And that's one of the fundamental ways in which we can bring health back into our lives, is to link the body and the mind using, as Dr. Weil said, the breath, which is one very, very powerful way to do it, because it's so often spoken of and it really is a bridge between body and mind.